Hi, I'm Dr. Bill Deagle, MD, AAEM-ACAM-A4M of NutraMedical.com and a consultant providing email advice free on advanced protocols for your optimized wellness and advanced technologies to heal and regenerate you. You can contact us at NutraMedical.com, that's NutriMedical.com, or 888-212-8871. You get free email starter protocols of our top medical-grade nutraceuticals, initial testing, and recommendations for your own primary doctor to do, as well as recommendations to give you an idea of a consultation and a full protocol to try to help you regenerate your tissues, heal naturally without the use of toxic polypharmacy. I can send test kits to you as well anywhere in the world and provide you recommendations to referral of specialty clinics worldwide. So contact me, Dr. Bill Deagle, at NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com or 888-212-8871. The NutraMedical Report. We have Josh Bernstein here, and I managed to listen to the Russian and English translations of the entire public debate. It wasn't the private one, which is 4 hours between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump in Helsinki. But here are the key issues, and I went to bullet points because I want to hear a response from Josh, because she didn't have a chance to listen to the whole thing. I did this morning, canceled my other appointment and made sure I listened. Here's the three main bullet points. Number one, basically, Trump blamed both America and Russia, which is actually correct, because the DNC and the FBI did not investigate the missing server or servers, even of other Democratic members, didn't get the 33,000 emails, and didn't pursue Hillary Clinton for crimes against the state by putting a server in a broom closet in a restaurant, where, in fact, it's very likely that foreign powers got information about methods and people, so there could have been dead agents, but we don't know who they are. So, number one, both nations were involved. Number two, and this is something where Trump did a deficiency, is there were 12 agents involved with, quote, hacking. But the hacking was actually like a B-movie hacking. It's like the Keystone Cops. If this was an actual intention by the GRU, it was done in a very poor way. So it probably was off the shelf in terms of being directly connected to Putin, because otherwise Putin was a intel officer and head of the GRU. It's unlikely it would have been done in a sloppy way so that it would be picked up. So it's almost like it was done in such a way that would be it was actually trying to polarize the election or hack into the servers and find information. What information do they have? I like Putin's response to say, hey, bring your team of Mueller and so on over, and you can actually ask these agents what they did. What they were doing basically is they were amplifying both sides, both the Trump side and the Hillary Clinton side, and even Bernie Sanders. So I don't think it would accomplish anything other than balkanizing or polarizing American politics, which is already extremely polarized anyway. So who cares? It didn't change the election. Trump won because he went to the Rust Belt states and campaigned. But where I think that Trump should have raised something is not just the cyber hacking of the election, which had no actions whatsoever, and none of these 12 Russian agents are going to ever be prosecuted on American soil. They'll fly to Russia and interview them. The real issue that I'm concerned about is cyber hacking into our power grid, our water treatment facilities, and our air traffic controllers. That's going to stop. And Trump should have said that we're quite aware of it and we're going to block it, but don't do it on my watch, buddy, or there's going to be consequences. We can literally shut down his foreign bank accounts of Putin and the oligarchs in about a heartbeat without even making a call to Paul Ryan or the Republicans in the House. And Trump could do that with one phone call, okay? So Putin needs to know that there's a new sheriff in town and he's not going to put up with Putin's crap, because Putin is a dictator. He suppressed his own opponent. And this is not a democratic society like he says it is. It's a dictatorial society with control by intel agencies that have got control. And we're actually moving in that direction ourselves. When I saw Peter Strzok's facial expressions and so on, it looked like a madman leaning forward with his mouth wide open like he's going to bite somebody, crowning his forehead and his eyebrows so you could see the dark shadow of his eyes. The man looked crazed, okay? And he had an arrogant and his body behavior would be somebody that I thought was basically a crazed killer. That's what I thought. And the fact that this guy acted arrogant and was squirming around in his chair when they'd ask him a tough question, then the Democrats started to defend him and said they're going to give him the Purple Heart. Do they not understand you get the Purple Heart if you get your limbs blown off and you die or almost die in battle? It has nothing to do with being a political operative for the Democrats, which is what he was. So I think that Trump should have been harder on him in terms of the cyber hacking into our infrastructure, including our power grid. He should have been harder on him in terms of what they've done in terms of other things. But I think this is where both our media on the left and right have screwed up, where they say he went in and he kind of took over Crimea. The people in Crimea asked him to come in because 95% of the people are Russians. Historically, they're Russians. And eastern Ukraine, the Donbass kids 4 or 5 Christmases ago were actually asking to please stop the Kiev maniacs, which are former Nazis, from shelling us and killing civilians that have no defense. So all Russia was doing is trying to give support to the local militia to stop the Western Ukrainians from attacking them. And then what we did is we did put a response in to give kind of tank-killing weapons to the Ukrainians to stop the Russians. The Russians had no intentions of coming in to eastern Ukraine. None. Zero. Nada. They took over Crimea because it's old ancient Russian territory, if you know any history at all. So I thought that our media continues to bash Russia, saying that they took over the Crimea. Crimea is Russian, period. Even Kiev a few hundred years ago was the capital of Mother Russia. Okay, so they need to get a little nothing in history. And as far as I'm concerned, Putin right now wants to actually work out an oil and gas deal because we're the number one oil and gas producer in the world. And if we don't work out a deal, we're going to not only kill our oil and gas shale people because we're going to be so low that the oil and gas people will go out of business, or number two, we'll collapse the Russian economy and they're going to get more polarized by their crazy generals to some future date nuke us. We also, the other thing that Trump kind of screwed up on is he didn't listen to me in Donald Spring when we told him that the Rosatom factory outside Moscow supplied the rocket systems and the guidance systems for the Kim's rocket systems that he had aimed at us, including in Guam. And the fact is, those are Russian technology, not Chinese. They're the primary systems in Kim's rocket systems and his nuclear delivery. Okay? So they're getting a lot of technical financial support from China, but the primary support is the old satellite support from Mother Russia. And Trump didn't put into it. So, you know, he had some pluses and some minuses. He tried to act real nice. I think that Trump is just trying to be a negotiator, but he needed to come out more strongly to condemn cyber hacking and his direct support by technology transfers to North Korea to literally proliferate the spread of nuclear weapons, because that's what Russia's stance has been under Putin since he took control 20 years ago. Your comments.
My comments are a couple things. Number one, I think that the summit itself, there were some things that were said that were not in front of the cameras. And for anyone to think that President Trump did not press him more behind the scenes, I think it's disingenuous. Because I believe
I think you're right. I think there probably was two kind of faces. He wanted to put a kind of geopolitical nice face on when he was before all the reporters and his own staff. But behind the scenes, right. I'm sure Putin was sweating eyeballs.
Well, the other part of this is I do not believe that that President Trump is going to offer Vladimir Putin concessions and recognize Russia's possession of the Crimea. I don't think that's going to be the case at all. I don't know why the media would even...
I don't think it's going to give possession. I think it's going to be off the table. I don't think it's... Because really, the real issue is, are they going to negotiate and work on final peace in Syria? Are they going to actually pull back and stop doing cyber hacking, not only of our election process, but all our infrastructure, which is dangerous as hell? They can press a few keystrokes in Russia and shut off our power grid, and we'll eat ourselves alive in a few weeks.
Well, so, here's what I think is interesting, is that President Trump is a nationalist, okay? And he's someone that's putting America first. And Vladimir Putin is also a nationalist for his country, for Russia. And then you have a whole mess of other countries in the European Union that are all globalists. So right. In some respects, it's Russia and the United States fighting against the globalists.
Exactly. They're natural allies is what you're saying, in other words, right?
What's that?
We are by our natural nature, we are allies with Russia. We should be against the transnational rise of the superstate Europe. And there's a negative side to this idea of bumping up NATO, because the reason why the Europeans want to have a trans-European...
I don't think we should give a lot of support to NATO. Because
right,
I don't
here's my point.
Best interest at heart.
Right, exactly. The problem is the rise of a superstate Europe with a big army and military is dangerous to the whole world.
Yeah, I can see that, but I also see Europe as pacifists, and they have been throughout their history for the most part. I mean, maybe not under Churchill, but for the most part, any time after that, they've always been pacifists. So I don't think that NATO and the European Union would be much of a match for the United States or Russia or China or any other country.
They would, but here's the problem. What I'm worried about is suppressing their own countries. Italy, Hungary, Austria already want to leave the current status and have a federated state of Europe where they have some autonomy. And the Europeans want a trans-European military not to fight Russia or America or China, but to suppress their own population so they can't have representative government. That's what Europe's all about. No more nation states, no representative government, and a bunch of bureaucrats to run everything. That's what's really bad. We need to call it out, don't we? Let's get into the globalism stuff. And we're back. And, you know, if you look back at the history of the United States, Russia supported America against the British during the Revolution and even afterwards. And we're, in a sense, natural geopolitical allies against globalism, Russia and America, aren't we?
Yeah, I think, like I said, I think what you're looking at is you're looking at two very strong nationalist leaders. You've got President Trump, who's obviously a nationalist for the United States, and then you have Vladimir Putin, who's a nationalist for Russia. And you have two strong nationalists that are fighting against globalism. They're fighting against NATO. They're fighting against the European Union. And I don't necessarily see that as a bad thing. I see that as a good thing. Because obviously, if we can curb globalism around the world, more countries will be free, more borders will be strong, more integrity of who those people are and their, you know, their makeup of who they are and their distinctive, you know, well-being of how they have a history will be intact. And right now, we're finding just the opposite. I mean, many of these 29 countries that are still left in the European Union, and now I guess you can say Brexit's probably not really going to happen either. So the entire European Union is winning here. And what are they doing? They're knocking down borders. They're flooding these countries with people that are outside of these countries. And therefore, they're changing the dynamics. They're changing the culture. They're changing the way these people are and who they are and their identity is. And I think that Russia sees that as a threat, and I obviously see that United States and President Trump and we see that as a threat, and this is something that we want to stop. So in some respects, I can see President Trump and Vladimir Putin working together to fight against globalism. And, you know, we'll see what happens with it. I don't think anything's going to come of it, maybe other summits, but... the American media and their reaction to it is just crazy, really.
Well, when you listen to the face of it, it's like suicidally crazy. It's not just little crazy. It's like, take this knife and stick it in your guts and then disembowel yourself geopolitically. It's the left and the news media are insane, clinically insane, aren't they?
They are. They truly are. And what it's not even that they're so much insane, but they're just misguided and they're just historically... I guess dumb, because they just don't get it. They don't understand. They don't look at the fact that globalism on the forefront through Europe, look what it has done to these countries. Why can't they recognize that? Why can't they even say, oh my God, look at these countries that used to be wonderful countries for tourism and things like that, like France and the Eiffel Tower and the Louvre, and it was a romantic getaway and all these other things. Now it's just an absolute disaster. There's nothing but refugees all around the streets begging for change, begging for money. The welfare state has exploded. There's people hanging in, you know, living on mattresses and everything else. It's just a disaster. And you're seeing that in Spain. And you're seeing that in Germany. I mean, Germany is an absolute disaster. How many of these refugees came into these countries? And look at Londonistan, for instance. Okay?
That's a good one. Same term I use, Londonistan, with the con job. And look at his, he approved this balloon, this baby balloon with Trump as a baby with a tweet phone in his right hand. I mean, how disgusting that Khan would approve of that.
Khan job is absolutely a horrible mayor. And he's so bad that I did an entire show on him when he was when the first thing he did when he became mayor was he took down the advertisements and magazine advertisements of women that were scantily dressed, maybe in, you know, swimsuits and things like that, you know, Sports Illustrated type of stuff. He took them all down in the subways. He took them all down on the buses. He took them all down everywhere that they were at and replaced them with images of Muslim women, you know, in headscarves and everything else. As soon as he did that, that's when I realized, oh, my God, London is just in for it. They are just in for it. And look, we got Tommy Robinson, who all he does is cover a Muslim rape trial, and they throw him in jail without a trial, without anything, for 13 months.
But they, put him in a prison with a majority of Muslims that'll kill him. I mean, putting him in a prison with a majority of Muslims.
They threw him into the equivalent of Rikers Island for us.
Yeah.
It's absolutely horrible. And I don't know. I hope that somehow he is able to get out. I hope that Boris Johnson or Nigel Farage would be even better. But at least one of them, I hope that they challenge her. I would love to see the Queen do one last thing here on Earth that would be great for humanity. Dissolve her current government immediately because the people voted to leave. The people voted for Brexit. And now it's not happening. That is a dereliction of duty from Theresa May, and I would love to see the Queen step in, dissolve the government, and force a new parliamentary election.
Yeah, I think so, and I think either one, Boris or the other leader you mentioned, who's been Fox regularly, should go back there and Nigel Farage, because I honestly think the Brits deserve better. I mean, what they've done is destroyed Britain. They're destroying it. And the worst thing is they're destroying the ability to even publicly have opposing viewpoints, and you end up in jail, I mean, because you oppose Muslims. This is the kind of crap that's going on in Canada. I have Canadian customer patients, and I can't believe what they tell me is going on in Canada. If I broadcast my show in any city in Canada, I'd be arrested within minutes, put into prison, and actually tried, and put in prison for years. Just for doing my show and just saying the comments I say, which puts in question the idea that Islam in any of its forms, including some of these people that are reformers, could ever work in America or Canada or Western nation. It doesn't. It can't.
It can't.
Okay?
It's not a tolerant religion. I've said this. I've interviewed many Muslim scholars, many of them. And I have even interviewed former terrorists that have turned Christian advocates and things like that. And I've asked them all the same thing. How can a religion call itself a peaceful religion if one of its basic tenets is to deny the existence of any other faith? They can't answer the question. They can't answer the question because it's not a peaceful religion if it does not recognize other faiths. What other religion do you know refuses to recognize any other faiths? I can't think of any right off the hand.
Really?
Christianity, you know, accepts and acknowledges Judaism. Judaism acknowledges Christianity. Buddhism, you know, acknowledges Taoism. I mean, you know, I can't think of any religion that says this is the way it is. This is the only religion in the world. And anyone else that doesn't believe in our religion is an infidel or needs to be beheaded. How is that peaceful? Explain how that's peaceful. I would love a Muslim person to call up the show and explain how that's peaceful.
That's right. And even the stupid comments by Macron in France saying you want to rewrite the Quran, it's like, are you kidding me? It's like trying to rewrite the Bible and take out the parts that you don't like.
Right. No, it's just crazy. And so if we know that these people have a 7th century mentality and viewpoint of the world, why on earth would we bring them into the 21st century and incorporate them into, you know, our lifestyle of freedom, prosperity, liberty, religious expression, freedom of speech? Why would we then bring them in there if they're not going to look upon that in their new country and say, hey, you know, we've got an opportunity to be free. We've got an opportunity to live our lives the way we want to live our lives. And they don't want that. They want to leave their oppressive countries and come back and make our country oppressive.
Yeah, exactly.
Not going to happen. Not under our watch.
Absolutely. Back in a moment with more. I think Trump should be, I'm sure he had a tougher meeting with Putin in that 4 hours he was there in the room alone before he came out and they spoke publicly. and so please continue. I mean, I think in the private meeting, I'd like to know what happened in this private meeting with Putin and Trump, because I'm sure there are much more fact-filled issues, like, for example, cyber hacking into the power grid, the air traffic controllers and the water treatment systems, that there's more specific details of who gave permission to these officers, even if they did a Keystone Cops hacking into the DNC servers or tried to do some kind of manipulation of the election, which actually had no effect whatsoever. The fact is, though, the left and the Mueller probe, if they're invited to come and investigate and ask these Russian so-called hackers, they're going to find they're not going to really get anything that's going to be of substance that's really going to allow anybody to be prosecuted here in Russia. I'd like to know if Putin's going to stop the cyber hacking. And the main thing is, how can they stabilize the situation in Syria? It's obvious that Europe and our own State Department are trying to make sure that they destroyed Syria and replaced Bashar al-Assad, which I don't think is a wise thing. Who are you going to replace it with? A radical Muslim leader that's going to make it even worse for Israel and the whole Middle East? I think it's craziness what we're doing. And at least Trump has got the sense not to put an army in there, and he wants to negotiate something that finally stabilizes the situation in Syria. And like the 1974 treaty that Trump talked about and Putin, that would separate the forces of Syria and Israel so there wouldn't be a big conflict. Because they're right on each back doorstep. I mean, it's only 10 miles from the Israeli border, Damascus, Syria. So, your comments.
My comments are that, yes, Bashar Assad is absolutely a very, very bad guy. There's no question about it. He's killing his own people. The sectarian civil war has been going on for years. I do agree, though, if you do take him out, who are you going to replace him with? Are you going to have someone like al-Baghdadi that's going to take over and fill that vacuum, or somebody even worse than even him? So I agree with you on that point. The other point I want to make is that if there was any kind of meddling in the election, which, again, I think is still suspect, but if there was, why wouldn't President Trump devote as much time and attention as needed to figuring out how to, you know, strengthen the infrastructure of our voting system? Instead, what he's doing is basically he had that Chris Kobach start that, you know, little club, if you will, that, you know, looked into voter fraud here and there, but it wasn't really anything robust. So my question then is this: if this is the fact that they're quote-unquote meddling in our elections, why on earth would we allow those deep state operatives like Rosenstein and Comey and Ray and, you know, and Mueller and all the rest of them to still be involved in anything having to do with our intelligence community? What if they just rig it in 2018 to get back at Russia or to get back at Trump or whatever, and they're retaliating, and they figure out a way to change the Diebold voting machines completely, and the next thing you know, Republicans lose the House and the Senate by overwhelming majorities.
Well, I don't think there are 700 plus different voting systems across America, so it's basically hack-proof, because some of them are pretty archaic. So I don't think that's likely. What they did is social media, which is pretty stupid. And the way they invested it is literally to polarize the voting. So I don't think anything the Russians did was like Keystone Cops was going to have any effect. I'm not sure exactly who authorized it, but whatever they did, they wasted their money, whether it's a Russian billionaire. Because we know that there were $400 million went into the Clinton Foundation for manipulating this Russian deal to buy in 20% of our uranium sources. I don't know if they didn't bring it up in the public dialogue about Uranium One, but to me that's a bigger deal. Why didn't they discuss Uranium One publicly?
Right. I don't know. I mean, I can't really answer that. Why isn't there a special prosecutor, you know, looking into Uranium One? Why isn't there a special prosecutor looking into Project Pelican, which practically nobody even knows about?
We'll go into Project Pelican. What's it all about?
Project Pelican took place in 2014 under the Obama administration, in which in 2014 the Obama administration gave a 35-year lease to a company known as Gulftainer. Gulftainer was a subsidiary of another organization called Crescent Enterprises. Crescent meaning Islam, the moon, the crescent moon. And Crescent was run, owned, and operated by the Jafar brothers. The Jafar brothers, one of them was a nuclear physicist who worked in Saddam Hussein's nuclear weapons program. So let me recap that for one second. Barack Obama allowed a 35-year lease on our Port Canaveral, Florida ports and gave it to a company who's owned, run, and operated by a former Iraqi nuclear physicist. So everybody can sleep well at night knowing that that's the case and that's what's going on. And
isn't that crazy? Isn't that crazy?
What's worse than that is that it didn't even go under a CFIUS review. CFIUS basically means like 16 of the top U.S. intelligence agencies get together and they go over these types of deals and they go through a very stringent national security threat assessment. That was never done. So in other words, Obama and his administration allowed this deal to go through without even a nuclear, a national security threat assessment, an involved threat assessment as well. Now, that needs to be investigated, too. There ought to be a special counsel for that. I mean, I could probably name right now, off the top of my head, 10 special counsels that are needed. Obviously, the Mueller investigation, Comey's leaking, Susan Rice's unmasking, Tarmac Gate, Fusion GPS. I'm already at 5, folks.
Yeah, exactly.
The dossier, that's 6. What else? Project Pelican, that's 7. Project Umbrage, that's 8. The email investigation, once again, that's 9. I mean, you know, I could keep going on and on and on and on and on. There's never been more crime committed in 8 years against the American people by Barack Obama's administration than in the history of the United States. Never. Okay? Obama and his administration made Richard Nixon look like Mr. Rogers.
That's pretty funny.
It's true. Absolutely.
Yeah,
and I hope Right Wing is watching and or listening to this. I can't wait for the next article that they put out because they're going to have a lot of good material here.
Where do you think this is all going? Do you think, like, I think what Trump wants now is he wants Russia himself to clear the deal to get North Korea to denuclearize. But you have to understand, it's primarily Russian submarines in the Orinoco River in Venezuela. So Russia is contributing to the proliferation of nuclear weapons elsewhere. The fact they're cyber hacking, and 2 months ago and a half, Putin even threatened that he can actually send a hypersonic cruise missile through the southern hemisphere, through the South Pole, that America doesn't have early warning systems. So on the one hand, he's a competitor, but on the other hand, Russia's making open threats that their nuclear forces can not only neutralize our Navy, but also, because, for example, they went over the Cook here a few years ago and neutralized the ship so it couldn't even steer in the water. And the only thing we'd throw it at is a coffee cup and a jet that passed over the conning towers for the radar. What people don't understand is Russia is not just a competitor. They're literally shaking their fists at us and cyber-hacking. In fact, they even cyber-hacked for China to get intel information so the Chinese communist government there. So what I'm very concerned about is a cabal where China and Russia are linking together to combine their forces, both economically and otherwise, to challenge not only the West. Because I think we need a fight against globalism, but it's more than that. China wants to become, by 2025, the prescient economic and military power in the Western Pacific Ocean. And I don't think people realize how fast this could devolve into proliferation of nuclear weapons all over the place, from Iran to Venezuela to elsewhere, which I think are already in the works.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think that all of that could take place. What I think's next between the United States and Russia, all I can really hope for is that there's an October surprise and Putin finally says, you know what, you guys want those 33,000 emails? Here they are, a week before the midterms. And just drop them all and let everything out, all of the information, the Seth Rich, everything, all of it needs to come out. Because if, and again, if they did hack the election, why hold on to the evidence? Let it all out.
Exactly. Let it all hang out, as they say, right?
Why I don't think that they did it and why I think that it came from WikiLeaks and Seth Rich.
You know that did. In fact, that I know about the meeting and the place outside that university and everything. That's why it didn't come from Russia. It all went through WikiLeaks, right?
Hunters.
back. So to summarize, I think we're opening the cans of worms that this meeting was a good thing. Ultimately, Trump's going to sort out and stop the cyber hacking. You're going to see some kind of stabilization of the Syria thing. You're going to see a stabilization of the threats against the state of Israel, which, by the way, are getting even more shrill from Ocasio-Cortez and the crazy Democrats who think that she's the future of the party. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the Democratic Party are in the final death throes of the entire party. If they think going uber left like this and giving advice, open borders and condemning Israel is a future for the Democratic Party, you're done. You're geopolitically irrelevant, and a third party may rise to replace them or even multiple parties. But I can tell you the Democrats, as they exist right now, they are dead in the water, aren't they?
Well, look, I don't know. I mean, when you look at, for instance, polling from 2016's primaries, states like Iowa and New Hampshire, for instance, Iowa, 84% of those under the age of 30 voted for Bernie Sanders, and in the live free or die state, one of the most independent, fiercely independent states, 85% of those polled that were 30 and under voted for Bernie Sanders. They look at Hillary Clinton and they said, my God, Hillary Clinton is like Ronald Reagan. Like, she's way too conservative to ever run again. So I don't know. I'm not 100% sure. I think that they would go that far hard left. And who knows?
I don't think there's several things.
The first thing, socialism, you never know what can happen.
Well, actually, if you look at the numbers, firstly, the youth don't vote as much as they should.
Thank God.
Number one. And number two, they don't have the numbers. And you're seeing the number of people that are middle-aged and senior citizens increasing because their death rates are dropping. So what you're going to see, basically, maybe 20 years from now, you might have enough people, if they don't mature, that they would support the Democrats. But, you know, the reality is, if you have open borders, just look at Europe. Look at Germany. A wonderful nation. I have friends that live in Germany. I can tell you it's a social disaster right now. And Angela Merkel's hanging on by one fingernail. Her compatriot in her party is basically saying he left the office. So basically, she's going to basically has weeks to live, actually, to try to reform her idea about stopping the massive immigration and having an open border. It's ridiculous. And I honestly think that as young people mature in this country, they're going to become more conservative just because they're going to learn from the school of hard knocks, aren't they?
Well, you would hope. I mean, past generations have eventually learned that, you know, through trial and error and hard knocks and all that other stuff that you're talking about. But when you have these coddled millennials, or as I like to call them, perennials, because they're weak, wilting flowers, you have a whole generation of these perennials out there that have been given everything. They feel a very strong sense of entitlement, a nauseating arrogance about them, and they've never had to work for anything or never had to do anything, and their baby boomer parents have given them everything, or their grandparents for that matter, because the baby boomers are getting pretty old, but really the Clinton kids is what they are, and now the Obama children are even worse. So we have a new generation of Trump kids, hopefully, that are going to be more conservative, but I worry because these kids under 30, these perennials, they're going to be future leaders. And a lot of them embrace socialism. I mean, if you look on college campuses, I think capitalism is at 58%. They would prefer capitalism, and 55% is socialism. How on earth could they do that? And the answer is because the youth do not know what socialism truly is. They don't understand that it is government control of goods and services. So when you tell a millennium, if you like socialism, and they say, yeah, I like socialism, everybody should be able to get a little bit of something, right? Then you say, well, let me ask you this. Do you want the government to run your businesses and own all of your property? And they go, hell no, of course not. That's because they don't know what real socialism is. And 16% of those people that were polled actually knew what it truly was. The rest of them had no idea. And again, it brings me back to this one example that I put out on a show. I actually said it on your show as well. And it's really this simple. If you think back when we were children, we all had our favorite red radio flyer wagon. I'm sure you had one. I know
right.
I had one. And I
absolutely
loved it. So here's the example. This is the best way to teach your children about socialism. Let's say you're a little kid and you get one of those beautiful red radio flyer wagons for Christmas. You're all excited. You got a brand new beautiful wagon. You're so excited, so you want to go down the street to your friend's house. You knock on your friend's door, and you go, check out my new wagon. Isn't it cool? And your friend goes, wow, that's awesome. Hey, can I have a ride in it? So you go, sure, no problem. So you put the kid in the wagon, and you're pulling him around, and you say, you know what, this is so cool, let's go to our second friend's house. So you go to the second friend's house, you knock on the door, he goes, check out my wagon. He goes, wow, that's a beautiful wagon, hey, can I have a ride in it too? And you go, sure, no problem. Well, now all of a sudden, you start pulling the wagon, and you realize, gosh, this is a lot heavier, I can do it. But man, is this hard? And you decide that you're going to go to your third friend's house to show him your wagon. You knock on the door and go, hey, check out the wagon I got for Christmas. Your friend goes, wow, that's amazing. Hey, can I have a ride in it? Now you're starting to think to yourself, gosh, if I put one more person in this wagon, am I going to even be able to pull it? And you go, well, I don't want to disappoint my friend. So yeah, go ahead and get in it. Now all of a sudden, you can't pull the wagon. Why? Because you got too many people in the wagon and not enough people pulling it. That is the best definition that I can come up with. It's my original definition of what socialism is. And if you explain that to anyone of any age, they can't refute that.
What's amazing is this is like the old statement of in Russia, and I had some Russian friends that said, you know, during the Soviet Union, that we would pretend to work and they pretend to pay us. And it was the subsistence farms that actually supported and kept the people alive that were little plots of land that the people had total control of. They could have a small garden, not the big, you know, government-run farms. Everything the government touches when you have a socialist, communist empire or total top-down control system like Obama was building with all the regulations, it's the anti-Midas touch. Everything turns into horse manure. It ruins everything, doesn't it?
It does. It truly does. It's never worked ever anywhere. But yet, the youth of America, they've been taught that to love government, to love big government, to embrace big government. And they think that somehow, now, on the 800 millionth try, it's got to work, right? Well, it's got to work at some point. Yeah, it failed every other time, but you know what? I got a feeling this is the time it's going to work. It's never going to work. It can't work because mathematically, it can't work. The math doesn't work with socialism, folks.
It just doesn't. It never does, right?
Eventually, you run out of other people's money. Eventually, you tax people to death to the point where the people that are creating and making don't have the incentive and or the ability to make and produce anymore. And now you have a welfare state dependent on the government. And now the government gives them everything but takes everything away at the same time by eliminating their freedoms. And then socialism is obviously a prelude to communism. How hard is this? A six-year-old child can understand this. I don't understand why there's an entire generation, an entire party, if you will, that can't see this. It's happened everywhere in history. And yet they repeat the same thing. They're going to do the same thing now in Mexico. They just elected a hardcore leftist radical leader. What do you think he's going to do? I mean, hit the repeat button, folks. This is what happens. It's not hard. It's the same playbook. It never has worked, and it never will work.
Well, desperate people to get large enough numbers that want to grant themselves something that's from other people's pockets. And when those pockets get empty, they wonder why everybody's starving. It's ridiculous, isn't it?
It's totally ridiculous. And look at Venezuela. I mean, it started in the year 1999 with Hugo Chavez promising his people everything. And what did he do? Within a year or two, he nationalized the oil companies. He nationalized the businesses. He nationalized the manufacturing companies. And the next thing you know, all him and his cronies were running everything. And eventually, when he finally did die, he handpicked Nicolas Maduro to take over. And what did Maduro do? He exacerbated everything that Hugo Chavez did, and now you have people eating their pets and rats to survive. That's socialism for you. That's type of socialism.
Amazing, isn't it?
Amazing.
It's like the bug hitting the glass and just not believing in glass, but never getting through the window.
Exactly. Yep. Absolutely true.
Yeah. It's like bang, bang. The bug keeps on hitting the glass. So I don't believe in windows. I don't believe in windows. It doesn't matter if it's 10,000 times their little bug nose hits the window. They're not going through the glass.
Exactly. All right, but
amazing. I hope that this works out, and that now that these ugly cans are opened with us in Russia, we can start getting things on the table that'll stabilize the world, get rid of the proliferation of nuclear weapons, build a space defense. Also, one of the things you mentioned is not to put weapons in space. We already have them, and so do Russia and China. Killer weapons to kill our satellites. They're already up there.
All right.
Imagine a pill that can improve your focus, your memory, your sleep. A catalyst to improve your brain chemistry. Dr. Bill's Cognition Plus is truly the smarter in an hour pill. A combination of amino acids, trace minerals, and B vitamins, Cognition Plus is made with specialized herbal extracts that will enhance and support brain function. Our customers say,
I feel more focused.
My memory's getting better.
I can work longer with more useful hours.
Power up your neurotransmitters that have been depleted, like dopamine and norepinephrine. Stimulate the release of others, like serotonin and oxytocin. Improve circulation and energy production. Protect your mind and your loved ones today. Order Dr. Bill Deagle's Cognition Plus at 888-212-8871 or go online to NutriMedical.com. That's 888-212-8871 or NutriMedical.com. And listen to the NutriMedical Report on the Genesis Radio Network with open lines every weekday. NutriMedical.com, bringing nutrition and medicine together.